Well, I love the words in that. I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. And we're coming tonight to look at the subject of money in Ecclesiastes chapter 5. And if you've been following this Sunday night series, you'll know that Solomon has embarked on an investigation into the meaning and the purpose of life. And he has looked at a whole range of things over these last number of weeks that we've been looking at together. He has searched in his journal for meaning and purpose in life in things like pleasure and work, in wisdom and in learning, in eating and drinking. He's examined the rat race of life that we were thinking about last Sunday night. And once again, he has concluded, if you look at chapter 4 and verse 8, he says, this is meaningless. This is a miserable business. That's the kind of conclusions that he's reached to his search so far. As he writes his journal into the investigation of the purpose of life and looks at all of these things, he says, this is a miserable business. And you know, Johnny and I, as we've been looking at this series on Sunday nights, that we've actually got a bit depressed at times as we've looked through some of the material in Ecclesiastes. There are not a lot of bright spots in this passage. And I was delighted to get the passage that I got tonight, because for once it's a passage which actually seems to flow. It actually seems to move through a particular subject and to reach some important conclusions. And in chapter 5, Solomon turns his attention to money and wealth and riches. And the question is that he's saying to himself, if I haven't been able to find meaning and purpose in life and all of these other things, when it comes to money and wealth, surely I will find meaning and purpose to my life in these things. Let me tell you a story. Once upon a time, there was a famous queen who paid a visit to a very rich king. She had heard so much about this king's immense wealth and wisdom that she just had to visit him in order to see if what she had heard about this king was true. She had heard about his architectural gifts. She'd heard about his amazing accomplishments as a builder. She heard that he was a poet. She had heard about his musical compositions. She had heard about his skill as a political diplomat. This was a man and a king worth visiting. And so this beautiful queen made the trip, and you can read about her response in 1 Kings chapter 10. She was, of course, the Queen of Sheba, and the king that she was visiting was King Solomon. Here's what she wrote in response to her visit. When the Queen of Sheba saw all the wisdom of Solomon and the palace that he had built, the food on his table, the seating of his officials, the attending servants in their robes, his cupbearers, and the burnt offerings he made at the temple of the Lord, she was overwhelmed at what she saw. She said to the king, "The report I heard in my own country about your achievements and your wisdom, it's true. But I did not believe these things until I came and saw them with my own eyes. Indeed, not even half was told me. In wisdom and wealth, you have far exceeded the report I heard. How happy your men must be. How happy your officials and to continually stand before you and hear about your wisdom." And I think if we were writing that in today's language, we would say that this queen was blown away by what she saw. Overwhelmed by this man's wealth and wisdom. It's been calculated that Solomon's annual income in gold was probably around about 15 million pounds a year. That's a lot of money back then. 15 million pounds a year. He was probably the richest and wealthiest man in the world in which he lived. He had parks. He had a zoo. He built an amazing temple. His personal residence was more like a museum than a house. He built lavish resorts and riding stables. In fact, it is hard to comprehend just how wealthy this man really was. Now, why do I take time to tell you that this evening? I tell you that because this is the man who has decided to embark on an exploration of riches and wealth to see if it gives meaning and purpose to life. This is a man who knows what he's talking about. This is a man who is worth listening to. This is a man who has deserved the right to pen the verses that we're about to look at. Here's a man speaking from his personal experience, and in tonight's passage he exposes the love and the pursuit of money and the hold that material possessions can have over us. Now please understand one thing this evening. The Bible nowhere says to us that it is wrong to be wealthy. Neither does it say to us, as some do, that money is the root of all evil. So let's get one thing straight tonight. This is what the Bible says about money. It says it is the love of money that is at the root of all kinds of evil. Some people eager for money have wandered from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs. And this passage that we're going to look at tonight, here in it, Solomon exposes four of those evil roots. And it helps us to see just how dangerous the love of money and material possessions can be. So let's turn to our Bibles tonight. And in verses 8 and 9, firstly, I want you to see that the love of money and wealth leads to oppression. Look at verses 8 and 9. Here's Solomon writing from his own experience. These are his observations of life. Here are the observations of a very, very rich and wealthy man. He says, if you see the poor oppressed in a district and justice and rights denied, do not be surprised at such things. For one official is eyed by a higher one, and over them both are others higher still. The increase in the land is taken by all, and the king himself profits from the fields. I want to suggest to you tonight that Solomon's journal here could be in commentary on the state of our world today, where the gap between rich and poor continues to grow. Just look with me at what he says in these verses. This first proverb or principle has to do with the influence and control that the rich have over the poor. Leaders often tend to be people who are rich, or to put it the other way around, it is the rich that often tend to be leaders, who take control of territories and provinces and nations and sometimes even continents. Leaders are often the best educated and the most influential because they get the most opportunities in life. They take control of how public money is spent. They take control over how the unemployed are supported or not, as the case may be. They take control of how our health service is run. They take control of how our immigrants are treated. Our leaders are the people who establish the red tape procedures, who put in place more and more and more officials, as Solomon puts it in verse 8. I mean, just look at verse 8. He's describing the red tape that exists in our society today. If you ever tried to get through a barrage of bureaucracy at any time, you'll discover that this is how it is in verse 8. It says, for one official is eyed by a higher one, and over them both are others higher still. Now that's a commentary on today's society, isn't it? Now Solomon is not suggesting that we have no need of leadership in this verse. Leadership is essential. Verse 9, he talks about the king profiting from the fields. But there is no doubt, as Solomon makes clear here, that the love of money often leads to the oppression of the poor in our world today. If you were here last Sunday morning, we were thinking about this disturbing statistic. We've come back to it on many occasions in this church. It's disturbing, and it should disturb us. Where 80% of the world's resources are being consumed by 5% of the world's population. That is what you and I are involved in. Leaving the other 95% of our world with just 20% to go around. That is what the love of material possessions and wealth does in the world in which we live. To the oppression and the exploitation of almost 95% of the world's population. Who says the Bible is not up to date and relevant? Who says the Bible has nothing to say in terms of our world in which we live today? Solomon knows what he is talking about. These words which Solomon wrote about the oppression of wealth were written 3,000 years ago. And it's as up to date as if you were reading it today. So here's the first thing that Solomon says about the love of money and wealth. As he observes the society in which he lives, as he observes his own lifestyle perhaps, as he observes this gap between the rich and the poor, he says, one of the things you need to realize is that if you love money and wealth, it will nearly always lead to the oppression of other people, and particularly the exploitation of the poor. The second thing he discovers in verse 10 is that the love of money and wealth leads to dissatisfaction. Look at verse 10. It's a wonderful description, isn't it? Whoever loves money never has money enough. Whoever loves wealth is never satisfied with his income. This, too, is meaningless. It's a great, brilliant, isn't it, scenario of those who love money and who make money their God. Solomon is saying, if you set your life up in that way, you will never have enough. You will never have enough money. You will never have enough wealth. It's a meaningless way of life. But Solomon is talking here about the love of money and the love of wealth, that driving ambition to accumulate more and more, that susceptible little lie that we sometimes buy into where we think if we just had that little bit more, just a little bit more, we would be happier. Solomon says that's a meaningless way of life. I was reading an article in preparation for teaching this passage tonight. And the question the article being asked was, how much do we need to earn in order to make us happy? Now, if you've heard any of this research recently, it's really quite fascinating. And research done by a leading psychologist suggests that once we get to a certain point in our salaries, he says the sort of sense of well-being begins to diminish. And apparently, according to this research, once a salary reaches the region of about £40,000 a year, there are diminishing returns for well-being. And the article ended with these words. This is very significant. This is a secular article. There may be a point at which people recognize that making more money is in itself an empty enterprise. Now look back, what does Solomon say in verse 10? He says, whoever loves money never has money enough. Whoever loves wealth is never satisfied with his income. This too is meaningless. Listen to some of the dreams of those who've won national lottery millions in the UK. Luke Pittard from Wales won 1.3 million after enjoying the obligatory holiday and a wedding and a new home. He got so bored with his newfound income that he returned to his old job at McDonald's. Or Mark Gardner from London, who won 11 million pounds. 13 years later, he still had all of his money, well, most of his money, but he had lost all of his friends, even though he had treated many of his friends to £100,000 homes. He also lost touch with his entire family. And as the Beatles famously put it, and it is the Beatles, not the Rolling Stones, as I got so confused a few weeks ago, famously saying, money can buy you a diamond ring, but it can't buy you love. And Solomon's teaching about the love of money and the pursuit of material things is bang up to date, isn't it? Whoever loves money never has money enough. Whoever loves wealth is never satisfied with his income. Solomon's saying this is a meaningless way of life. It's empty. It's without purpose. To the money hungry, enough is never enough. Money can buy us tons of short-term comfort, says Charles Swindoll in his commentary, but not one ounce of contentment. So here's Solomon investigating the meaning and purpose of money and wealth in life. He said, perhaps if we investigate this area, we'll find some sense of value here, something that gives us a meaning for getting out of bed in the morning. Well, he hasn't discovered too much yet, has he? Because thirdly, in verses 11 and 12, he draws the conclusion that the love of money and wealth leads to frustration. Look at verses 11 and 12 with me. As goods increase, so do those who consume them. And what benefits are they to the owner except to feast his eyes on them? The sleep of a laborer is sweet, whether he eats little or much. But the abundance of a rich man permits him no sleep. And how true that is. I love the expression in verse 11, as goods increase, so do those who consume them. I was reading this week of a 19-year-old guy, Michael Carroll, who won almost £10 million just a year ago on the National Lottery. During his celebration, he celebrated in a very modest way. Not suggesting this is how you should do it, but he celebrated with a spag ball and a bottle of vodka. It was a kind of simple way of celebrating a massive win. But simple tastes don't stay that way for very long, because with such a wedge of money in the bank, this former dustman bought a fast car, a luxury mansion, and began to spend all of his money in Norfolk. And Solomon says, as goods increase, so do those who consume them. And sadly, shortly afterwards, this man's wife walked out, taking with them their baby daughter. What a vivid description Solomon gives us of those who set their lives on the accumulation of more and more stuff in the hope of finding contentment and happiness. Taken to its logical conclusion, this proverb in verses 11 and 12 could be expressed a little bit like this. More money, more people. More people, more worries. More worries, less sleep. That's true, isn't it? I'm sure some of you are familiar with the children's program Postman Pat. A lot of our children grew up on the original version, which was a very, very, I loved it actually. It was a lovely little kind of quaint television program. I believe it's become a lot more sophisticated now. But the one I saw was the one I used to like. And often on a stressful day, I would sometimes say to June, you know, I would love to be Postman Pat. I would love that lifestyle. You get into your car. Some of you are not. You get into your car. You drive down through the village. You deliver a few letters. You have a few conversations. You help a few people who are in difficult situations. You go home. You put your feet up. You feel good about the day. And you've got the evening off. What a great way of life. That's fabulous. That's what Solomon is saying here, isn't he, in verse 12. The sleep of a laborer is sweet, whether he eats little or much. There is a simplicity to life like that. And the other thing, the other dream I have, you must think I'm a nutcase here, but the other dream I sometimes have is when I sometimes go down to the ferry that goes across from Strangford to Porta Ferry. On my stressful days, when I'm down in that part of the world, I look at the guy who's driving that boat, and I think, you know, I'd love to do that job. You just drive backwards and forwards, maybe about 20 times a day. You deliver the people from one side to the other. The cars are delivered safely from one side to the other. Everybody gets to where they're supposed to go. You go home. You put your feet up. You have a good evening. You have a good night's sleep. And there's nothing else to worry about. And Solomon is sort of saying that in verse 12. He says, the sleep of a laborer is sweet, whether he eats little or much. That's what Solomon is saying here. But look what he says in verse 12. He says, the abundance of a rich man permits him no sleep. There's a real frustration that comes with the love of pursuit of wealth and material things. When good things increase, so do those who consume them. Verse 12 is talking about the abundance of a rich man, permitting him no sleep. In Proverbs 19, Solomon puts it like this: wealth adds many friends. Why is that? Because usually people are looking for someone with lots of money. Like the guy I quoted earlier who inherited millions of pounds but lost all of his friends and even lost touch with his family. How tragic. Here's how someone has summed up the frustration that the love of money can lead to. When a man's possessions increase, it seems that there is a corresponding increase in the number of parasites who live off him. Management consultants, tax advisors, accountants, lawyers, household employees, and sponging relatives. This is bang up to date stuff, isn't it? That's what Solomon is saying. The abundance of a rich man, verse 12, permits him no sleep. And Solomon is giving us an honest account of the perils that money and the accumulation of stuff can bring. Here's Solomon probably reflecting on his own life here. And the frustrations of having so much stuff. Increased possessions and wealth. He has more anxieties than ever. He has more people living off his salary than he ever thought possible. He can't even enjoy a restful night's sleep, verse 12, because the love of money leads to oppression and it leads to dissatisfaction and it leads to frustration. He's uncovering some serious lessons that we need to take note of, and he knows what he's talking about. This is part of his own personal journal. And fourthly, he says this in verses 13 to 17, the love of money and wealth leads to deception. Well, what he refers to here is a grievous evil in verses 13 to 17. Let me just read through these verses with you. I've seen a grievous evil under the sun, wealth hoarded to the harm of its owner, or wealth lost through some misfortune, so that when he has a son, there is nothing left for him. Naked a man comes from his mother's womb, as he comes, so he departs. He takes nothing from his labor that he can carry in his hand. This too is a grievous evil. As a man comes, so he departs. And what does he gain, since he toils for the wind? All his days he eats in darkness, with grief, with great frustration, affliction, and anger. Here in these verses is a picture of a man who's hoarding stuff for himself. That's his purpose in life. It's just to hoard it, which is, he's saying here in verse 13. He says, I've seen a grievous evil, wealth hoarded to the harm of its owner. And he hits a crisis in his life, and he loses everything. And not only has he got nothing left for himself, he's actually got nothing left for his children either. And the message comes loudly and clearly in verses 15 and 16, you cannot take your stuff with you when you die. You can't do it. That's what Solomon is saying here. You will leave this world the same way that you entered it, verse 15. Naked a man comes from his mother's womb. As he comes, so he departs. He takes nothing with him in his hand. Of course he doesn't. Solomon forces us to face the moment that we like to ignore, that moment of death. And he confronts us with the lie that we so easily buy into, that material things and wealth and possessions give us a sense of security, that even death itself needn't have any problems over us. But what happens to your security when you lose it all, as the stock market crashes? What happens to your security if you have it in your house and you now find yourself in negative equity because house prices have crashed? What happens to your sense of security when you are made redundant? What happens to your sense of security as you face death? You cannot take it with you. Solomon confronts the lie that many people today buy into, that the pursuit of money and material things can help us to feel more secure. Solomon says, you know, you will leave this life the same way that you entered it. You can take nothing in your hand with you. And Solomon calls this kind of thinking and this kind of living a grievous evil. And it's no ways for the followers of Jesus Christ to live. He says, like eating in darkness with great frustration, affliction, and anger. So here in these few short verses, Solomon exposes the love of money and wealth for what it is. This is his own personal journal. He's writing from his own experience. These are the words of one of the wealthiest men who lived in Solomon's day. He knows what he's talking about. He says, these are the things that I have discovered, probably from his own personal experience. He says, if you set your course and your life on the accumulation of stuff, it will lead to the oppression of other people, and often the oppression of those who are poor. It will lead to dissatisfaction. It will lead to frustration. It will lead to this deception of thinking that stuff can make you feel more secure in life. And actually, you and I can lose everything overnight, because that's the kind of world that we live in. He knows about the dangers. But I said to you, this is one of the more easy passages to preach this evening, and I'm just glad that it is, because you get to this point of the passage and actually begin to realize that Solomon's made some important discoveries here. And there are three things that I want you to notice about what he has discovered himself that gives him contentment and purpose in life. And I think if we can grab these lessons, we will find them really helpful this evening. Here's the first one in verse 18. He says to us that life is a gift from God, and that you and I need to learn to enjoy that gift. What does he say in verse 18? He says, I've made a realization, I've made a discovery. He says, verse 18, then I realized that it is good and proper for a man to eat and drink. Enjoyment is a gift from God. And Solomon encourages us that as we live our lives, we are to enjoy them. By eating and drinking, he's not just saying that's all we do in life. It's just a way of saying that is part and parcel of how we live our lives. He says, enjoy what you have. Recognize that it is a gift from God and learn to enjoy it. Refuse the temptation to make more and more and more. So what he's saying to us is this. God has given you and me the gift of life. And he has given you that gift because he wants you to enjoy it. So learn to enjoy it. Learn to laugh more. Learn to find pleasures in the simple things of life. Enjoy your friendships. And don't fall into the trap of thinking that you have to spend lots and lots of money in order to enjoy yourself. I have to say to you tonight that some of my most precious memories and experiences have come from times with my family and with my friends, and there are things that money cannot buy. We often fall into that trap of thinking, we've got to spend money if we're going to enjoy ourselves. It doesn't have to be like that. That's a lie that we often buy into in the world in which we live. So desperately we need to be reminded of that truth, that life is a gift from God. Learn to enjoy it. The second thing that Solomon discovers also in verse 18 is that work is a gift from God. Some of you might sort of groan when we get to this point. You say, work a gift from God? Well, it is a gift from God. Look what he says in verse 8. Then I realize, he says, that it's good to find satisfaction in your toilsome labor under the sun during the few days of life that God has given to you, for this is your lot. Essentially, he's saying to us that work is a gift which God has given to you. The Bible calls us to enjoy our work. The Bible calls us to find fulfillment in what we do. It's not always true that there is a better job around the corner. And we need to learn to find fulfillment in the job that we are currently doing. Charles Swindoll gives us this advice in his commentary on Ecclesiastes. He says, as Christians, we need to invest more in the vertical dimension of our lives and less in the horizontal. He says, we need to learn to invest more time for the glory of God. We need to learn to give generously to the work of God. We need to learn to keep just what we need. That way, we will discover a whole new dimension to our work and the purpose for doing it. Pretty challenging stuff. Lessons to learn. Work is a gift from God. And finally, in verse 19 in this passage, contentment is a gift from God. So learn to be satisfied with what you have. Look at verse 19 with me. Moreover, when God gives any man wealth and possessions and enables him to enjoy them, to accept his lot and to be happy in his work, this is a gift of God. He seldom reflects on the days of his life because God keeps him occupied with gladness of heart. And what's Solomon saying to us? Stop looking over your shoulder at what other people have. Don't fall for the ad for the latest new car, or the latest games console, or the latest phone, or the latest computer. Because how often do we buy things that we don't really need? Solomon had it all. He says, I had anything that I wanted. And Solomon says at the end of his investigation, even though I had everything that money could buy, the most important lesson that I have learned, he says, is to be content with what you have. Enjoyment in your life, fulfillment in your work, and contentment in your heart. What a great balance. Do you remember the words of the Queen of Sheba when she met King Solomon? What did she say? She said, half of it wasn't told to me. But actually, Solomon has saved the best half for people like you and me in his journal. If Solomon was living today, I suspect he might say something like this to us. I may look happy and successful and secure, but the half hasn't been told. I may appear to be fulfilled and happy, but that is not the whole story. My possessions would lead you to think that I've got it all together and life is sorted. Now let me tell you the other half of the story. The love of money and material possessions leads to oppression. It leads to dissatisfaction. It leads to frustration. It leads to deception. So let me leave you, says Solomon, with three important lessons from my own personal experience. Life is a gift from God. Learn to be content with what you have. and you will discover enjoyment in your life, fulfillment in your work, and contentment in your heart. They are the words of a very wise man who lived 3,000 years ago, who is speaking to us tonight from his own personal experience. I suggest to you tonight, he knows what he is talking about. And it's well for us to take note of the lessons which he has been teaching us.